So that's the history, the prehistory of all this, except there's a deeper history. It goes back to these roundtable groups that formed beginning in 1920, like the Royal Institute of International Affairs, the Council on Foreign Relations, the Bilderberg Group, the Club of Rome, then the World Economic Forum, then the Trilateral Commission. These are all roundtable groups based on Alfred Milner's roundtables. This is really where these are all globalist organizations that have been pushing a global agenda for over 100 years. So this reset, it's a reset of everything. This is just an outline of the kind of things they want to reset. It's all domains of human life: economic, environmental, geopolitical, governmental, industrial, technological, social, and individual. And then the Great Reset, the economic system that they want to usher in is called stakeholder capitalism. Now, stakeholder capitalism is a euphemism and doublespeak for this kind of a collusion between the government and the state, and the corporate world, and this kind of a cartel shared monopoly scheme that it establishes. I'll talk about that in a minute. We talked about, and somebody's mentioned already, some of the strategic partners. This is really where some people will say, well, the World Economic Forum, they're just a bunch of ineffectual buffoons. They don't have any power. They can't do anything. These globalists are just talking. They go to meetings and nothing happens. That's absolutely untrue. They have signed on 1,000 of the world's top corporations in all the major sectors of the economy, and they're all firmly behind this agenda. BlackRock, Inc. is one of the major ones. Larry Fink is the CEO. He sits on the board of trustees of the World Economic Forum, and he is firmly behind the stakeholder capitalism regime, which has as its main mechanism the ESG score. And he declared in 2021, in a letter to CEOs, climate risk is investment risk. And then he effectively said, we have long believed that our clients as shareholders in your company will benefit if you can create enduring, sustainable value for all of your stakeholders. As more and more investors choose to tilt their investments towards sustainability-focused companies, the tectonic shift we are seeing will accelerate further. And because this will have such a dramatic impact on how capital is allocated, every management team and board will need to consider how this will impact their company's stock. Translation: if you don't get on board with the sustainability ESG stakeholder regime, you're going to be starved of capital and die on the vine. That's the translation. And this is merely a translation also of Schwab's own admonitions, where he says, every country from the United States to China must participate, and every industry from oil, gas to tech must be transformed. We have to make fun of these people. This is a part of resistance. And the ESG, as we've already, I'll just sort of fly in. There's Schwab's remarks. And there he is, likened to Dr. Evil. There was a GM commercial that featured Dr. Evil, and I swear to God, they were playing on this Schwab character entirely. That was at the Super Bowl, not this past one, but the one before. So I'm going to sort of skim some of this. This is Larry Fink's, this is the assets under management by BlackRock. They held $10 trillion under management. They're the largest asset manager in the world. And this guy is the tip of the spear driving ESG. So it's not like Schwab is like a quarterback on the field. Okay? He's just executing the plays that are being called down from the booth. And people like Larry Fink, they're kind of like the offensive coordinator. Okay? And then there might be a layer above him, who are calling the shots altogether. I'll tell you why. I don't care who they are later. This is the executive order that Biden signed into effect, which basically said that climate-related risk is, you know, financial risk. And then he signed another 12 EOs related to these issues. And his first veto was exercised in vetoing the a bill that would take ESG out of investments of pensions. That was his first veto in office. So what is this economic system they want to establish, which they call stakeholder capitalism? I've written about this for Mises Institute. I have a whole series on this, which was the germ of my book. And I thank them for that. And then I want to say that even socialists say that stakeholder capitalism is a form of socialism. This is a socialist who wrote a paper called Toward a Less, should be toward, okay? There's no word towards. Toward a Less Irrelevant Socialism, sharing stakeholding as a reform of the capitalist economy. And so basically in this paper, he's arguing that stakeholder capitalism is a form of socialism. It is a kind of socialism. Here's the kind of socialism it is. It is what I call, well, what's been called corporate socialism. And what is corporate socialism? This is the late, great Anthony C. Sutton, Hoover Institute scholar, who wrote about corporate socialism. He said, John D. Rockefeller and his 19th century fellow capitalists were convinced of one absolute truth, that no great monetary wealth could be accumulated under the impartial rules of a competitive laissez-faire society. The only sure road to the acquisition of massive wealth was monopoly. Drive your competitors out of business. Reduce competition. Eliminate laissez-faire. And above all, get state protection for your industry through compliant politicians and government regulation. This avenue yields a legal monopoly, and legal monopoly always leads to wealth. Then he goes on, this robber baron scheme is the socialist plan. The difference between a corporate and state monopoly and a socialist state monopoly is essentially only the identity of the group controlling the power structure. We call this phenomenon of corporate legal monopoly and market control acquired by using political influence by the name of corporate socialism. So that's what you say to people when they say, this isn't socialism, it's being run by a bunch of capitalists. No, this is being run by a bunch of monopolists. That's why it is socialist. What is socialism if not a monopoly system? These are monopolists who want to monopolize the economy. They use the ESG as a demarcation device in order to drive out all the competition and exclude them from the marketplace and retain complete and total control over the rest of the economy. And it does this to the detriment. Speaking of what it does to small business, it's aimed at destroying it. So it leaves a two-tiered economy, a kind of, I'll also call it this, but it's a kind of actually existing socialism on the ground and a corporate oligarchy on top, or also I've called it capitalism with Chinese characteristics, which is a play on the Chinese Communist Party's description of their own economy as socialism with Chinese characteristics, which is a piece of rhetorical gymnastics like nothing you've ever heard. Why? Because what it is it was the CCP's way of rationalizing for-profit production while they maintained a socialist ideological political structure. And so they called it socialism with Chinese characteristics, which is ludicrous. I call it this system. So what they're doing is these globalists, they want to basically establish socialism or capitalism with Chinese characteristics globally. This is my contention. And the Chinese system is the model for the Great Reset. They're looking at China and they go, look, you still have for-profit production by these oligarchs. You have total control over the population. You have this great surveillance structure, and you still get generated wealth for the few, and they've even said this. For example, Klaus Schwab's mentor, one of his mentors, and one of the mentors is Henry Kissinger, but another one is Maurice Strong, who was an environmentalist and United Nations Undersecretary, former director of the United Nations Environment Program, the first, and the WF board member, foundation board member. He said to The Guardian, "We know that pure capitalism hasn't worked. In China, they have used their system, which they call a socialist market economy, quite well to achieve their objectives. They have learned how to use the methods of capitalism to meet their own goals of socialism." That's what he said. So this is what they want. They've been modeling China, and Schwab recently, in an interview with Chinese TV, with official state Chinese TV, said, "China's the model for the world." He effectively said, "China make a good model for all nations." He started speaking Chinese a little bit there. He was kind of like influenced by that environment. You know how it is. One way to understand this is that this is, one of the other things about this is this brings up what they call public-private partnerships, which draws these corporations. So here's the very tricky thing. For anti-statists like us, what they're doing is drawing corporations into the state and making them state apparatuses. We see this going on all over the place. You saw it with Twitter. You're seeing it with Google. These are not private companies per se. They were first of all established by InQtel, which is the CIA's own funding agency. Secondly, they operate as state apparatuses and controlling opinion and narratives and even canceling people from the public sphere. So anyway, but what this represents is not only sort of what leftists will say is the privatization of the government. What really is going on here is the governmentalization of private industry, turning private industry into governmental agents. This represents InQtel and who they funded, for example. Of course, they're a CIA operation. They funded Nokia, Microsoft, Oracle, Google, and Facebook, and IBM. In the case of Google, it was their startup funding. Same with Facebook. Through Greylock Partners, but, you know, that's how they do things. They try to have some intermediaries, so it's hard to track. So, there's this fourth industrial revolution. What is this about? I'm just going to cut to the chase. This is high-tech surveillance and control. They promise this, like, transhumanism, like, you'll have complete access to all knowledge of all the world at the tips of your neurons without even going on the web. You'll have so much power and you'll be able to use AI. It'll be connected to your own brain. You'll become a supercomputer yourself, all this kind of stuff. But it is not really going to be used that way. These are going to be used to control the population at large. And this technological 4IR really represents like a dystopic science fiction novel. The applications include ubiquitous internet, the internet of things, the internet of bodies, autonomous vehicles, smart cities, robots, nanotechnology, digital identity, central bank digital currency, genetic engineering, and so forth. One of the things about this Great Reset is that in terms of the social order, what it promises is kind of what they're calling inclusion, but it's inclusion in a shared destiny. But this inclusion represents the subordination of netizens, which would be us. That's what they call us, netizens. A total political and economic disenfranchisement and a hypervigilance over the self and others, or what Hannah Arendt called organized loneliness. It's great that we're meeting, because this is what they want, is organized loneliness. They even said so in the age of the organized loneliness manifested itself in lockdowns, masking, and social distancing, and the exclusion of the Alone Together public service announcement produced and circulated by the Ad Council in March of 2020 represented this organized loneliness succinctly. They actually ran an ad called Alone Together. Together we're alone, basically. I don't want to make you feel hopeless and helpless and hapless in the face of all this, so I have a 9-point plan to stop it. And one of the panelists said, basically, the sort of sentiment that's behind this. I call this the grand refusal. They want to call it the great reset. By the way, everything great that has ever been proposed by these kinds of people, like the great leap forward, the great purge, the great society, they've always been dismal failures. So it's ironic that they would continue to use terms like great with reference to this project. So there's 9 points that we should there's a 9-point plan, and it's a kind of a principle, sense of principles. The main premise of the 9-point plan is that we need to cut the global puppet strings from ourselves. We cannot control necessarily what these people try to do, but we can we can cut the strings from our bodies and minds. And that's the premise. So the 9-point plan includes refusing the CBDC because it is the closing of the totalitarian circle. If you have to beg, borrow, and steal, and trade and barter and use other currency to avoid the CBDC, do so. Refuse the Internet of Bodies, where they're going to try to install technology on your body and in your body as a way of monitoring your organs and organ systems. Sounds crazy. It's all on the table. Refuse digital identity, which is this is basically a database that will follow you from cradle to grave, not exactly for all of us, but the idea is a complete record of all of your activities, including probably a political profile, etc. Digital identity is a disaster and must refuse it. Inclusion, they'll sell it under the terms inclusion, but inclusion means totalitarianism. When there's no outside of a system, that's totalitarianism. So that's what they are. And then, of course, we have to practice the free market in all our affairs. And that is to say, we must keep the free market alive. Somebody mentioned remnant. I think it was Alan. I think that may be all we are as a remnant. We may not be able to reverse the global agenda ourselves, but we can remain a remnant that will that will pass on to the future a legacy of individual freedom and the principles of the free market and self-determination. That's the very least we can do. We can do better, but that's the very least we must do. Then, of course, divest from any ESG stocks electronically in their asset managers. Remove money from ESG reporting banks. And that includes, like, Bank of America. Brian Moynihan is a major pusher of this ESG stakeholder regime. So check out and see if your bank is actually participating in this. And they probably are. We need to make a tectonic shift in the other direction, taking our money away from this beast. Because it is a monopoly scheme that's meant to crush and destroy large segments of the economy and well-being. Legislation. We saw the first attempt at legislation to curb ESG struck down by Biden. So it's very difficult to, I don't put much hope in legislators to do anything. And unfortunately, they're very much infiltrated. We can still pressure them to divest. For example, we fund the World Economic Forum. The United States funds it. I mean, this is just unbelievable. This has to stop. And I would say, to go further, we should stop funding the UN. Encourage them, like these 19 states that signed a letter to Larry Fink saying we're not going along with this, and other states are pulling out, like Florida will not go into ESG indexing for their pensions. We need to put pressure on legislators to get pensions and other funds out of the ESG index market and away from those asset managers. It's so easy to identify who, you know, the marks are all over the beast. And I think we also need to encourage defection from the elite. There are some possible elite defectors. I don't know about the status of Elon Musk. He's an ambiguous figure in my mind. But I like to keep hope alive that he may actually represent some possibility, at least in getting some victories. He does operate this company, Neuralink, which is really brain cloud interfacing, effectively. It could be brain cloud interfacing. That means your brain will be on the web. But he's also sort of like-minded about ESG. He called it a scam. And he is also at least nominally in favor of free speech. So we'll see. But in any case, there have to be other elites out there, too, who must defect from this insanity. Because it will be a disaster. I go into the book, the agricultural disaster. It represents the kind of famine it could actually produce and so on and so forth. So check that out. But all in all, I'm calling these steps part of the grand refusal. And this is my iconic character to represent the grand refusal. Some of you will recognize this figure, Howard Beale, from the movie Network. Although he delivered his message through the television, this newscaster gone rogue encouraged his viewers to turn off their televisions, to thrust open their windows, and to scream, "I'm mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore." And although his viewers were framed by their rectangular boxes of their windows, which resembled TVs, and thus replicated the TV itself, Beale's individual and collective viewers nevertheless issued a clarion call to each other and to the elites. And I think we need to issue a clarion call. We are not going to take this anymore. This isn't a call, this is not a call for revolution. This is a call for counter-revolution against these revolutionary, subversive elites that are wrecking our society. And altogether, these what I call subversive elites who have nothing but the subversion of the social body in their as their objective. So, I would just leave it at that. This isn't a drill. We're not trying to achieve another utopia. We have realistic ideas. We don't look for perfection. We look for sanity, and we look for the continuity of our species. So we are not insane, but they're going to call us that. They're going to call us everything in the book. But we must not allow the elite and their minions to deter us with such epithets. We have a world to save. Thank you.